The Blizzard is by David Ives, directed by John Rando. It features Jesse Eisenberg, Alfredo Narciso, Heidi Schreck, and Sarah Sokolovich. We are in a remote country house. Toward evening, a cold blizzard rages.
Neil! Neil! Neil!
Oh, it's still coming down. Some of those drifts are yard deep already. What's the matter?
Nothing. I just wondered what happened to you.
You got scared, huh?
No, I wasn't scared. The food's all ready. Do you really think they'll make it up here in this?
Joe's got those new chains on the car, the ones that Sandy made him fork out for. Just what you'd expect for Miss Rationality.
Right, Mr. Listmaker. Mr. My pencils have to be laid out in the right order on my desk. No, you're not rational. Sandy is rational.
What about the TV?
Nothing, not a thing.
The electricity's on. You'd think with a satellite dish we'd pick up something.
The telephone's still out.
They've probably been trying to call us on their cell since they left the city.
There's no radio either.
No radio?
Isn't it great? It's just like an Agatha Christie.
Thanks for that. I'm still not used to it, being so remote. Nature has always scared the living hell out of me. Now I'm living in it. Or visiting it, on weekends, anyway. You know, I saw a bat flapping around out there. I didn't know there were bats in snowstorms. No radio? The world could be ending out there, for Christ's sake, and we'd be the last ones to hear about it. No radio.
We have no radio, and a beautiful blizzard, and a house, and woods, and a mountain that are all ours.
All ours in 29 years and 3 months.
I kind of wish they weren't coming up tonight. It's so cozy. I wouldn't mind curling up with a book.
I wish you hadn't said Agatha Christie.
You inflict Torturama 1, 2, and 3 on people, and I can't say Agatha Christie?
Those are movies. Not a real house in the middle of the real country with the lines down. And Torturama paid for our little mansion on a hill, babe.
You know what it is about murder mysteries? No, listen. I think that the reason people like murder mysteries is that in a murder mystery, everything is significant. The people in murder mysteries are living in a significant world. A world where everything is there for a reason. Even before the murders happen, you know that one is going to happen, and you know that everything is a clue. Or rather, you know that some things are clues and some things are just obfuscation, they're snow. And you know that everybody has a secret of some kind. A secret that's like a soul. Murder mysteries are religious in a way. Don't laugh. They're life the way you feel it when you're in love. When everything is in a special light. Incandescent. They are a couple of hours of everything meaning something, for God's sake. And then they're over, and you're back to your old life, to real life, to mortgages and pork loin and potatoes and making rhubarb pie.
Real life doesn't feel like it means something these days?
Sure it does. I'm just saying. Well, don't we all wish for that in real life? One of those moments when everything feels charged with meaning? When the air is electric?
Well, here's your opportunity. Listen, we're probably going to be totally snowed in. Why don't we all do something different this weekend?
Different? What does different mean?
I don't know. Something unusual. Something unexpected. Not you and Sandy holding yourself up in the kitchen and talking about whatever you talk about. Not me and Joe sitting around talking about Mom and Dad and what happened in third grade. Not the usual pour a glass of Jack Daniels. What have you guys been doing? Going to dinner and break out the Margot 01. Have you seen any movies? Did you catch that episode of blah, blah, blah? I don't know. Something we've never done before. Or let's talk about something we've never talked about before. Anything, instead of all the things we usually talk about.
Okay, something unusual. It's a deal.
Hello? Neil?
Oh, there they are.
Hello, Neil and Jenny, right? Sorry for the cold hand, I'm freezing. God, you're just like Joe and Sandy described you. I can't believe I'm finally meeting you, Neil. I am such a fan of Torturama, all of them. Natasha can't watch them herself. Natasha's squeamish.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Salim and Natasha.
Hello, I'm so happy to encounter you at last. And you, Jenny, you are just as beautiful as Sandy told me. You are exquisite.
And God, what a place up here, but so remote. Wow. We brought this for you.
Whoa.
A little housewarming gift.
Whoa.
I know it looks like a black valise.
Whoa. I'm sorry, maybe there's been a mistake.
I mean, this is the place, isn't it? You're Neil and Jenny. Oh, right. Where are Joe and Sandy? middle of a snowstorm, two strange people walk in. You're spooked. Totally natural. Natasha?
Joe and Sandy couldn't make it, so they sent us instead.
They sent you instead? Wait a minute. They sent you instead.
They caught some kind of bug. God, Joe and Sandy have been telling us all about you two for, well, I don't know how long.
A long time.
A very long time.
I don't think Joe and Sandy ever mentioned knowing,
Salim.
Salim. And Natasha.
You've been out of touch with your brother for too long, brother. They were really broken up. They couldn't make it tonight. I'd say call them up and ask them, but hey, are your cell phones as down as ours up here?
How do you know Joe and Sandy?
You know what's in this black valise? Just for showing us your hospitality, it's this new tequila, $100 a bottle. Olé, right? Let's support those oppressed brothers churning this stuff out for 10 cents a day. Neil, you want to pour?
You didn't answer me.
How do we know Joe and Sandy?
How do we know Joe and Sandy? How do we know them, Natasha?
Intimately.
Intimately. Good word. We know them intimately.
Neil? Neil!
Look, I'm very sorry, but I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
To leave? But... okay, I get it. I get it. You want some kind of proof that we're not just, what?
Imposters.
Imposters. 10 points, Natasha. We're not imposters. We're the real thing. I'm sorry if I'm coming on kind of strong. It's my personality, you know what I mean? God, how do you prove that you know somebody? Let's see, where do I start? Do I start with Joe or Sandy? You know, she made him get these hotshot snow chains with a car. That is so Sandy. No imagination, but always thinking ahead. So rational. Listen, I'm sorry we barged in on you like this. Maybe we should leave, but... hey, are you really going to turn two freezing strangers back out into the storm? Neil, you're the guy who inflicted torturama on the world. More killings per square frame than any movie in history. You're pouring blood in the aisles, man. Don't tell me you're scared. What are you scared of? What am I going to do to you, huh? If I was going to do something to you, I'd have done it already, wouldn't I? So do we leave or do we stay? Aw, have a heart, Neil.
Well, we can't turn you out in this weather.
Turn them out, Neil.
Honey, I...
turn them out!
It's a blizzard out there, honey.
Your wife is so sweet. Really. She's a doll.
You know, with so much snow, it's like we're in a murder mystery here.
Natasha adores Agatha Christie. You know what I hate about murder mysteries? It's that everybody in them's got a secret. People don't have secrets. People are open books. I don't know you personally, Neil, but just looking at you, I'd say you're probably the kind of guy who makes lists, for example. Lines his pencils up on the desk, likes things neat and tidy, am I right? A Jack Daniels before dinner kind of guy. You're not the kind of guy who, what, secretly worked for the CIA once upon a time? You're not a guy with a secret history of killing people. I mean really killing people. Off screen. You don't have any real blood on your hands. You're in the entertainment industry. You have nothing to hide.
Send them away, Neil!
And Jenny, she probably made her usual dinner for tonight. Let's see, what would it be? Pork loin and some kind of special potato recipe and a cherry rhubarb pie for dessert. The perfect American housewife. Nothing to conceal. I'm sorry, there's that personality of mine again. I'm brash, I'm insensitive, I'm loud. Call me American.
You know, I have a gun in the house.
That's rich. What a liar. I have a gun in the house. Right. That's so cute. This isn't a movie. This is real life, Neil. And I'm your brother for the night. I'm a stand-in for Joe. Remember me? Your brother?
Where are Joe and Sandy?
They're very sick in bed is where they are.
What have you done with them?
They can't move is what they are. Aren't I your brother? Neo? Come on. Am I your brother?
Sure.
Am I your brother? Am I your brother? Am I your brother?
You're my brother.
There, you see. How hard was that? Now, we can talk about all those kids we used to beat up in third grade, just like old times. Well, brother, what do you say? We're here for the duration. You gonna play the good host here, or what? You wanna show me around the grounds?
Sure.
Sure what?
Sure, brother.
Attaboy. You first.
You know what I love about murder mysteries? Is that everything in them seems to mean something. The people in murder mysteries are living in a significant world. Everything holding its breath. Waiting. The air is electric and then bang, it happens. The irrevocable. Whatever that is. Changing everything. It's a kind of poetry. To me, it's almost a religious feeling. Significance.
I don't want any more significance. I don't want it. I don't want it.
Poor Jenny, afraid over nothing. Why? Why?
You have the wrong people.
You're the right people. You're Neil and Jenny. We're just here for dinner with you. And you have nothing to be afraid of, really. Absolutely nothing.
Neil! Neil!
Absolutely nothing.
That was The Blizzard by David Ives, directed by John Rando. You heard Jesse Eisenberg as Neil, Alfredo Narciso as Salim, Heidi Schreck as Jenny, and Sarah Sokolovich as Natasha.
Thank you all for joining us. We have David Ives,
Salim, Sarah Sokolovich. Natasha had to leave. She's actually employed. So I look at this as a murder mystery where everything is significant. But if you think everything is significant in this play, it doesn't add up somehow. If you had to say what actually happened, who did it in this whodunit, what would you say, Heidi?
I feel like they did it to themselves.
Good answer. I love this. I wrote the play and I didn't know that, but I'm learning so much already.
We didn't know what they did.
Yes, thank you, Heidi. Yes, thank you, Heidi. What do you mean?
So, I mean, my character's desire for some kind of more significant or exciting life, I feel like in the beginning of the play, I sort of ask for that, and it is indeed what I receive. And then I realize it's not what I actually wanted. So I guess I read the play on that kind of psychic level.
I agree with Heidi, but for my character, it's a kind of parallel experience. He creates these horror movies that are in the safety of a fictional story. And then, you know, in a way, brings it upon himself because he's so paranoid of those things actually occurring to him. But of course, they never do. Until now.
Actually, I was just thinking, it's like, yeah. Beware of what you wish for, because this play is going to be about that, and you are in deep trouble.
How do you all first read the script? Are you able to read it objectively, or if you know your character, it becomes that character-centric?
They normally just count the lines first.
And then either agree to do the thing or not.
Check the contract, see what they're paying, then count the pages.
Well, I guess the difference between doing something like this and something that's like live theater is that you can kind of embrace it in a more exaggerated way, I guess. You know, maybe you were internalizing it that way because you're kind of forced to internalize it in order to bring it out in an exaggerated way to make sense for this medium.
So there's freedom in radio.
Less so. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, no one's looking at your weird face, so you get to, like, you know, do silly things with it, and no one's going to see it.
In your play, Jenny says she loves murder mysteries because everything in them has a meaning and is significant and is there for a reason. Would you describe good writing as writing where every word is there for a reason?
That is one of the things I like about playwriting. It's not necessarily that every word is significant, but that every word has to count. There's only one rule of playwriting, which is don't bore the audience. You just don't have the time to let the audience's attention flag for a single second. And so there's a kind of compactness to it, and yet it has to feel leisurely. It has to ripple along and feel natural, and yet it all has to count. Once you've done that, I think you are free then for the sort of bigger significance, which is, you know, why we love Shakespeare, is that every word counts in the biggest possible way and is significant.
But in this play, Neil, the screenwriter, finds that he's actually living in the genre that he writes and gives to the world. Do you, David, ever feel like you're living in one of your creations?
Yes, but I can't tell you which one. I'm contractually not allowed to tell you which play of mine I'm living. Because it's being recorded on radio at this very moment by you.
Do you write what you're afraid of in general?
Every play comes from someplace different, I think, or I hope. But I found a wonderful quote recently from Philip Larkin. Writing about things really does to help get rid of them, hence literature. Which is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So I suppose one does write to get rid of things in a certain way or exorcise them. Mm-hmm. It's always a bunch of different things that make you want to do something.
What did you all, upon reading it, make of the eavesdropping, or was it not eavesdropping?
I think that they were eavesdropping at the door, actually, and heard all these things. But I think they also got a lot of this information from Joe and Sandy.
I can't say I thought of it as eavesdropping. It seems to me that when somebody knows something about you that you can't account for, it is very creepy. If you feel that somebody has been intimate with your life or the details of your life and you don't know this person, it's a creepy feeling. I never thought of it as eavesdropping. I thought of it as the strangeness of that secret knowledge of, that somebody has of you.
I also wondered if there was some notion that maybe they are in fact so predictable that someone could just guess.
Yes, oh yes, that's great. Pot roast and potatoes and rhubarb pie. Oh, I should also add a footnote, which is that when I was a kid, I read murder mysteries, you know, two a day, but I wrote fan letters to Agatha Christie, and she wrote me back. Oh. And I have these wonderful letters from Agatha Christie.
Oh my God.
Handwritten letters from Agatha Christie, you know, responding to me, telling me that she hated the movies of her Miss Marple series. And so that was so fantastic that she took the time to scribble
so
out these pages.
The question I want
and
to
so
ask Jesse's,
when this play says Agatha Christie, I have a personal relationship with Agatha Christie. Agatha Christie. Aggie, we call her.
Jenny
loves
that
in murder mysteries, everybody has a secret
so
of some
of
kind, a secret
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Like a soul. How is
had
a secret like a soul?
They were
going to
make this movie.
I guess the secret is your inner life, and your inner life, if you want to call it that, is your soul, maybe? I don't know. I guess I took it as meaning like there's something that you don't know about someone, and that mystery is their soul.
Mm-hmm. That sounded great.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
I just made it up right now.
I personally, I absolutely agree.
Me too. Wow. Convincing.
Thank you all so much for coming in and talking. Thank you, David Ives.
Thank you.
John Rando.
Thank you.
Heidi Schreck, Jesse Eisenberg, and Alfredo Narciso.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.